welcome back to another exciting episode of Extra Features Podcast. Today we have a guest I've been promising for months to come back on. So I feel really bad about this, but he doesn't seem concerned by it, but I am. David Barry, thank you for coming back.
Happy to be here.
So you're a producer, you do a lot of stuff. I mean, I know we're going to review something old today, Share the Music's the name of the film. So what have you been doing during the pandemic? I mean, this must be hard for you.
Not much. You know, living in Hawaii and being cut off on the mainland, there's been no film. I filmed very little in the past year. I did an ukulele lesson series for a musician I know here on Maui, but you know, the islands were really closed up for the first 6 months of it. Nobody could get in and out. It was, and the film industry was hit very hard. So, but you know, the break has been nice. I stayed home and, helped my son with his Zoom school and cause he's doing distance learning and, kind of caught a breath because I hit a really prolific period where in the span of, I think, 6 years or 7 years, I did 10 films, you know, so, a natural pause is a good thing. I got all my films onto Amazon Prime. I redid my webpage and things like that. And thinking about things that I'd like to tackle once this is all behind us. So that's what I've been doing.
So let's start right there. What are you going to tackle in the future?
Well, music stories are my niche. I love music stories, so I'm thinking about some ideas. I had an idea of this, just this idea of a catch-all kind of film about, when the music starts again, right? Because, we've all grew up and lived our lives with concerts and music and everything, having access to it. And then it suddenly went away, you know? And it hurt an entire industry, of course, but it hurt people too. And you know, ever the optimist that I am, you know, I'll tilt the glass to make it look a little full, you know. I do believe that end of this year, next year, if we all behave ourselves, concerts and music will start to come back. And I think a great story to tell would be to interview people in different sizes and different, you know, so try to get a Dave Grohl or a Rolling Stones or and then go to club musicians too and smaller ones and talk to them about, you know, what does it mean be given this back, you know? And what did you do in that period when we didn't have it? I think that's a fascinating story.
I thought you were going to surprise me with the Tool documentary. I was really looking forward to that.
You know what? We should talk about that. If I had access to them, I would definitely go down that road for you. Because I know you're a big fan. I've always been fascinated by Maynard. I don't have any access. If I did, I'd look into it for sure.
Well, come on. He's not that far. He's in Arizona. He's making wine. You can just do a little flight down there, catch a little golf, drink a little wine, and do a full flight.
This is why you should trust me with it.
I am trusting you with it because I'm going to come.
I meant him. I meant him.
Oh,
like, this is why.
Absolutely. Yeah. He should trust you. I'm going to personally come as a gopher on set, anything you need. I'll be there.
Okay.
I'll carry your luggage. I'll make sure you have your lunch. I can do that.
Well, you know, Tool might be a good one to talk to for that film, in all seriousness, for that film idea that I gave you, because they're a medium to large-sized band, and they were directly impacted by this, because if memory serves me, they either had just released an album. I have no doubt that any touring ideas for them got squandered, you know what I mean? So now what do you do on the other side of that? And that might be an interesting, you know, they might be an interesting band to talk to for it.
Okay. Enough of our introduction, people. We're going to get to Share the Music. Can you just help the listeners out a bit? What is Slap Heat? Like, I did watch the film, and I guess not being a music guy, I'm still a little confused after finishing the film. Yeah. What is exactly Slap Heat?
So the Cliff Notes version is that in the 1800s, the king of Hawaii, Kamehameha III, was gifted some cattle by European nations. And they were brought to the big island of Hawaii, and a kapu was put on them, which means that you can't touch them, you can't do anything to them. Well, very shortly, the cattle continued to produce and produce and produce, and you had a lot of cattle there. Hawaiian houses are made out of grass. Cattle eat grass. Suddenly we had a housing problem, right? I mean, the cattle just became a nuisance, and there wasn't anything to be done about it. So Kamehameha reached out and brought over Kaniolos, well, that's the Hawaiian word. So what he brought over were vaqueros, which were Spanish cowboys coming from Portuguese and Spanish guys, basically from Mexico, Southern California, and down into Central and South America. And he brought them to Hawaii to teach the Hawaiians how to take care of their cattle. Cowboys out on the ranch at night, they'd gather around a campfire, and they'd play music with these guys would bring their guitars, and they played a Spanish style of music. And they taught the Hawaiians this stuff. When their contract was up, they left Hawaii to go home, but they left the Hawaiians with their guitars. So now the Hawaiians have these instruments, but they didn't know how to tune them. So the way the Hawaiian mind thinks in general is kind of like with thrift, in that, you know, they try to take the smartest way to work at something. So what they did is they tuned the guitars to the voice that was going to be singing using open tuning. So instead of like a standard tuning on a guitar, they would turn the knobs to get it to sound on a basic strum to be in key with whoever was singing. And this is how flat key was born. They also didn't have the three guitar players. The Spanish guitar players, you'd have a bass player, a lead player, and a kind of rhythm melody player, right? Well, they didn't have that. So they started developing a finger picking style where they could play the bass, the rhythm, and the lead all at the same time. The root parts of it to fill out the song. And that's how slack key was born. Now these Hawaiian families, they kind of spread out on a couple different islands, and they kept the guitars with them, and their tuning became a closely guarded family secret. I mean, they wouldn't just teach this. There are lots of stories of Hawaiian musicians wanting to learn it from their fathers or grandfathers, and the grandfather would take it out of the family get together and play, and then untune the guitar so the kids didn't know how it was tuned. It was closely guarded. And this is where I got the idea for Share the Music, because when I did George Kahumoko's film and I was introduced to slack key, I learned how a lot of these guys had to learn the music from watching their family members play. And I heard the story over and over about the guitars being detuned and hidden, right? And it was very fascinating to me that in a very short period, starting in the 80s through, you know, the end of the 90s, slack key exploded all around the world. And so how did it go from this closely guarded backyard Hawaiian family secret to being something shared around the world? I just thought that was very fascinating, and that's what Share the Music was about.
Okay. You did a much better explanation now than you did in the film. The film is like a 30-second to a minute with all animation, and then I'm kind of like, you go right into it. So thank you for that. So my question is, how did you get introduced to slack key? Because what I'm understanding from watching your, I'd say, series of Hawaiian films, I think I'm stating it right, because most of them.
It's a series.
That all Hawaiian music is slack key. That's really what I'm thinking. Am I wrong here?
No, it's not. There's a lot of different kinds of Hawaiian music. Ukulele is used a lot. Then there's the more traditional stuff, which is more just rhythms using you know, different kinds of hand drums. Hawaiians had music that was based in chant, and that's because they didn't have a written language. So all of their stories and their history was handed down in chant. And so you had kind of like a rhythmic type of thing that would be played along with it. The same with hula. Hula carried the traditions of Hawaii and the stories of Hawaii through the dances, right? But you didn't have stringed instruments traditionally accompanying hula. You had a couple of percussion players, okay? And so slack key was introduced in the 1800s with the story I just explained, when the paniolos were created. The paniolo is a Hawaiian cowboy. So when the Hawaiians were taught how to take care of cattle, they learned string instruments from the guitars, and that's how slack key came about. Now, I would say that slack key is one of the most traditional Hawaiian musics, because this is my opinion. I want to be very clear about that, okay? Simply because of how it developed in families and in the backyard around family get-togethers. And the songs, they do carry Hawaiian culture and tradition in them. ukulele music can and does too. It's not that it doesn't. The reason that I gravitate to the Slack Key stories was because I met George, Uncle George Kahumoku, and he introduced me to all of this stuff. And I found it very, very interesting. The reason that I gravitate more to the Slack Key stories and a little less to the ukulele and things like that is because of the cultural aspect. My feeling, this is my opinion, it carries more of the Hawaiian culture through the Slack Key music because of the nature of how it was shared in the backyard, family get-togethers, things like that. Ukuleles were used for that as well. It just feels more connected to it for me through the Slack Key guitar. You'll see a lot more ukulele used for, you know, Hawaiiana music or other things like that. But when it gets down to, like, you know, the real Hawaiian songs, which are being sung in Hawaiian, you can certainly play them on ukulele, but they sound more authentic to me on a Slack Key guitar. And that's just my opinion.
Okay. So they say Hawaiian music, I think you say it, I think George says this, that is there in the heart. Now, do you feel that being an outsider? I mean, you're not a traditional Hawaiian. I mean, you're transplanted. Do you feel the same thing after getting involved in this music?
Hawaiian by heart. Yes, I do. Hawaii's a very interesting place. They say that the islands either accept you or reject you. And what that means is that when you come into Hawaii, if you are open-minded to the culture and you kind of learn how to do things the Hawaiian way, with a Hawaiian heart, things go a little smoother. And that's with aloha, you know, if you approach everything with aloha, which sounds kind of probably on the outside, it sounds kind of cheesy or whatever, but it's real. It's very, very real. I can tell you that. How does an Irish boy from New Jersey get to tell these stories with these amazing Hawaiian artists? Because they accepted me in. But, you know, my relationship with George was built around not just the music. I used to go up to his farm like every week and I'd help him on the farm. And I learned so much about Hawaiian culture standing next to him, you know, taking care of plants and planting taro, and which are kalo, is called in Hawaii, but taro, that's where you get poi for people. But they use it for all kinds of foods. The one that most Western people would know would be poi, right? But it's a central thing to their culture. And so when I did all that with him, I was opened up to all the rest of it too. And then George was approached about, he was nominated for another Grammy. He had won 5. He was nominated for another Grammy and he was approached by a lot of people to do media. And a couple people wanted to tell his story. And he was like, no, you know what? If we're going to do that, Dave should tell it because he's a filmmaker and he's here with me all the time. So I, you know, so that's how it started. And it started with George's film. And then we did Uncle Richard's film and Dennis Kamakahi's film. And then we did Brother Nolan and Martin Pahinui, who's you know, the Pahinui family is a very famous Slack Key family. And then I did a couple of newer guys, Kavika Kahiapo and Jeff Peterson. And then the last film we did in the series was the Show the Music film.
Oh, so I'm on the last one. So I just put on whatever one I looked at. I'm like, that's the one. See, because I want everybody to know, he redid his website and really screwed me up what order to do them in. So now I just picked one I had seen.
Yeah.
So that explains how George, I'm just going to say George because I'm never going to say his last name correctly, as your host. So that made sense. So you said, okay, I hang out with this guy every day. I'm at his farm once a week. You're the host, George. You're going to have to do this.
Well, I wanted George to be the host because he's in Hawaii. He's beloved. You can't go anywhere with Uncle George without people knowing him. I've been in airports around the country with him and people know him. He's pure aloha, like the other uncles, like Uncle Richard. But George has a weekly Slack Key show. He's out front with it. And I felt by him being a host, it helped his show a little bit, you know, just on a business side. If you see him all the time, I just wanted to help Uncle George too, you know, because allowing me to do the films helped me greatly. So let's help promote him and promote his show. That's why,
pure aloha mean? You brought it up twice now. What is pure aloha?
It's just a feeling you get. I'll tell you, if you have a minute, I'll tell you a quick story. And it's about another person in the film. Richard Ho'opi'i. Uncle Richard is He passed away. I did a film on him. He is a Hawaiian Leo Kie Kie singer, which is Hawaiian falsetto singing. He just played on the ukulele, but he used to tour with Uncle George all the time. He's from a tiny little fishing village here on the north shore of Hawaii. I mean, really tiny. Just a few families live down in this valley. It's beautiful. And I was doing Uncle George's film. I was on the mainland shooting interviews all up and down the West Coast in California. And I'd driven all the way. I started in L.A. and then went up to San Francisco. And then I drove all the way up to the northern part of California to Paradise, California. And I did an interview up there with and then I had to get back down to L.A. to catch George and Uncle Richard and Oana Salazar. They were playing a show there, and I was going to film George and around the show. So I had rushed all the way down to California traffic to get all the way back down to L.A. I'm downtown L.A. It's just, you know, you could just feel the angst of being, you know, in the big city. And I got into my hotel room. I had to rush upstairs, get cleaned up, and come back down to meet them to run to soundcheck. So, I mean, I'm just go, 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 go. I got up to the room, came down, the doors open, and I heard around the corner, just sitting in the lobby, I heard Uncle Richard's unforgettable voice, him singing and just playing beautiful Hawaiian songs. And my whole body just decompressed. I didn't even see them yet. I just heard them. The temperature in the room changed. And I walked around the corner, and there he was, and Uncle George was sitting there too, and he just had a smile on his face, just playing, singing. People going by, they stop and look like, why, what are these Hawaiians doing? You know, but it's just, that's pure aloha. It's just this wanting to share, you know what I mean? Not expecting anything in return, just purely wanting to share, out of love. That's aloha. That's pure aloha. And, George has that. And, Richard has that. Uncle Dennis had that.
So I'm not going
to
go.
I'm very blessed to be around that.
Okay.
Go ahead.
What, you shoot a lot, I find, around the island. I mean, people may think you're always in one area, but I've noticed you have to move around a lot to shoot your documentaries. I find you're in at least 8 to 15 different locations. I could be wrong, but 8 to 15 at least. Now, do you vary your setup for each location, or you already know what you're going to do before you get there?
It depends. Some of the locations I know because either I've been there before or because they're directly tied to this story in some way. So I need to shoot around, you know, how it's going to impact the story. Some of it is just, you know, set up. Some of it is dictated because I like to do a lot of stuff outdoors in Hawaii, right? That's why we're in Hawaii. But the weather can be very tricky in Hawaii. So sometimes, you know, angles are literally picked out and tied by time of day, by wind, by, you know, by the things that I'm going to have to deal with that day. But yes, I shoot, probably 15 different locations each film around Hawaii, different islands, different areas of the island. Lots of times the songs, like especially with the performances, a lot of times the songs will dictate where we shoot because it's about that area.
So before you set up on documentary, before you've even left the house, how do you do your research? How do you know this is what I'm going to do? Because you seem very systematic in all your films, like you're explaining everything to me slowly.
Well, that's just the storyteller in me. But, you know, yes, there's a lot of pre-production, a lot of planning to say, okay, we're going to interview this person at this place at this time. And you're creating a production schedule and all of that. There's tech stuff that goes into it in terms of which cameras I'm going to use, making sure I have enough hard drive space, batteries, you know, all of that stuff. But when it comes to the story, I know the overall story that I'm going to tell. I know where I think it's going to end. And usually I'm pretty accurate on that. And I know where it's going to begin. Okay. But I let the story lead me through the storytelling. So when I sit down and I interview, yes, I have a list of questions, but, they sometimes will be very, very influenced by what the artist is telling me. Because I firmly believe when I interview somebody, yes, you have to get the things that you need to tell your story. But people, if they agree to do an interview, they have something that they want to share. And so you want to give them the opportunity, the platform to share what it is in Hawaii we call it their mana'o, their knowledge. And I find that oftentimes just by starting a conversation and being quiet and letting people speak to me and engaging, you know, I don't, you know, if you heard the raw material, you'd hear me talking to, but, I prefer to let them lead me. The story will reveal itself as you do. I mean, that might sound a little hokey, but it does. The story takes you to where you're going to go. And I just allow it to guide me. There are certain things, like songs. If I ask an artist, like, I don't know, when I did Jeff Peterson's, Jeff had certain songs he wanted to play. Those songs were written about specific places. So, you know, you call out to the locations and you get permission to film and you do all that stuff up front. Then you work with the artist and say, okay, we're good to go. You know, tell me what days are open in your schedule, because these are hardworking guys. These are people who are playing 5-6 nights a week. You know, they're not wealthy musicians. So it's, you know, you got to find the holes in their schedule and then you set it out. You know what I mean? But, so there is planning. I don't want you to feel like I'm just willy nilly about it, but no. The story, I definitely let the story lead me to where it's going to go.
So can you tune a slack key guitar?
Could I tune one? No.
Wow.
You know, it's very interesting. I come from a musical background. I played in bands. I played rock and roll music. I think I've told you that, right? People have always asked me why I never took guitar lessons from George. And I kind of kicked myself for not, but that wasn't our relationship. You know, the music was just a part of it. You know what I mean? I was more interested in doing the things that he loved, which were around farming and food and teaching, you know? And so, there was a time a few years back, I thought about writing something and asking him to play on it, but it never developed. I never once asked any of those people for a lesson in anything.
Now, in the film, you discuss hula and music can be done without the other. Do you really feel that? Because I've never seen somebody do a hula without music. Or maybe that's just in my culture.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Hula, as I was saying earlier in our discussion, originally it was only accompanied by percussion instruments. And it was done to a chant. It was done to a chant. Yeah, so can you do it without that? Purists and traditionalists would say, no, you can't. You have to have at least that. Now, do you need stringed instrument? Do you need a guitar? Do you need a full band? Absolutely not. You know what? I'm going to say you can't do it without it, because even when I watch a hula artist rehearsing, they're going through the motions, but they're singing to themselves. You know what I mean? They're telling the story, even if it's muffled and quietly. I think that they require each other.
Okay. Do you always feel you want to tell a whole story, like the full story of everything?
Well, I mean, as a filmmaker, I think that's my job to tell the full story. You know, if I was just doing segments for something, I could do segments, and just do a segment on this or a segment on that. But you know, because I've always just done feature length docs, that kind of gravitate then towards a full story.
Now, when you were learning about with the slack key guitar was hidden, they do emphasize that very heavily at the beginning. Now, do you find as a researcher that fascinating? They wouldn't want their music to be out there and people to know slack key exists? 'Cause that's what I felt, that they were hiding it from the world. Like people would hear it. But you couldn't buy a CD, like the guy, you really go into that at one point.
Yeah. Well, you have to understand, Hawaii, you know, there is still a large sentiment here that feel that the islands were improperly stolen, from the Hawaiian people. Hawaiian feel that Western culture was forced upon them. I mean, you have to realize that this is not, you know, hundreds of years ago. I know people whose grandparents grew up and they weren't allowed to speak Hawaiian in public. There was a period of time where the Hawaiian language wasn't allowed. Okay, so you have to understand the mindset of a people who want to hold on to a very beautiful culture. And so for a long time, yes, I can completely understand the concept of, no, I don't want to share this and I don't want to show this because I don't want it taken away from us, if that makes sense. It wasn't for the rest. It was, and they didn't view it as a commodity. You know what I mean? It was music. It was what they did, at home. And so, I can understand that and respect it. And I also understand and respect the desire to share it. And that's why I found that story so fascinating. How it went from being that backyard thing to becoming so well known, and taught. I mean, now when George tours, when most of the Hawaiian Slacky artists tour, they'll hold a workshop before their concert. Like, people can come down, right? And actually sit with them and learn. So you'll see all these people bring their guitars to the show. They'll sit in a circle with George, and George will teach them basics of Slacky guitar. It's beautiful.
Okay. This may be a question. I just said, I only noticed there were two women in the film that play guitar. Were they the only two women you could find, or the only two women you interviewed, or the only two women you were interested in? I mean, I don't know how many women play Slacky guitar at the time you're filming this.
There's not a lot of well-known female players. There's one more that I would have liked to have interviewed, but I couldn't get in touch with. And she lives on Kauai. Her last name is Combs. She's on the Dancing Cat label. And George Winston wanted me to interview her. George Winston was so helpful in this process. I hope you enjoyed the parts with George Winston. He's a treasure. He's a musical encyclopedia, that man. And I've been so fortunate and blessed to be able to spend some time with him speaking throughout the series. But he wanted me to interview her. And I couldn't get in touch with her. But yes, I mean, and the younger girl, Aja in the film, she goes into it a little bit, and so did the other one. You know, Hawaiian music was very male dominated for a long time. So, and that goes back to the cultural roots. Uncle Richard speaks about it in his film. Historically with the Hawaiians, the women were not the entertainers. The men were. Right? The men were the ones who sang and played music. So culturally, you know, to graduate to women playing has taken longer than maybe other places. But there are not a lot of female Slacky players. So, I wish that there were more. That are really well known. There's more all the time, right? If you go to George's workshop, you'll see just as many women taking lessons now as men. But if you were to look at who's playing gigs around Hawaii, there's not as many.
So let's continue on. More. What makes a slack key master? Because they do talk about that at times.
You know, that's an interesting question. I think that it's just something that you kind of graduate to when you've lived a life of playing slack key music. Like, I don't think there's not a test, you know what I mean? It's not like, well, now I know 50 tuning, so I'm a master, right? It has much more to do with a totality of knowledge about Hawaiian music and culture and where the songs come from and the kauna in the songs or the hidden meaning and the history behind it and all of that. Cause you know, the two greatest players that come to mind are, for me, are Ledward Kahana and Jeff Peterson. But then I think about like Uncle Kevin Brown and Uncle George, who maybe cannot play the leads the way those guys can, but their wealth of knowledge of Hawaiian music and, you know, it's one of those things that you know when you know, you know, if I could say that.
So I made some bad notes here, but I think you're probably fair. Why is there no doc on A Unity? Or I have the wrong thing written down here.
I don't know what A Unity is.
Ah, crap. Yes, I made bad notes. Like, probably something I was watching you got into, and I wrote one. No doc on A. Oh, on Auntie. That's what I wrote on Auntie. Whoever Auntie is.
Oh, yeah. Well, I was never introduced to her. She passed away before I met all these people. And yeah, I wish there was. Auntie Edith Kanaka'ola, yeah, I wish there was a film. And there might be, maybe something was done. I'm not aware of one. Certainly very deserving.
Was there a shot for you to do a doc on her, or she had died before you got into this?
She had passed before I got into it. I wish I had met Auntie Edith. Wow, that would have been amazing. Nothing's ever been done.
Okay. How many different kinds of slack key tuning are there?
Hundreds.
Hundreds? Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay. Did the slack key festivals open up the music to everybody?
They did. They did, because they were free events that people could come to. And so maybe it didn't, you know, the original ones that Milton did, that George Winston came over to record back in the 80s, early 90s, you know, it may not have been real easy to get a lesson from somebody yet, but you could hear it now publicly. And it was publicly aired on it was broadcast here in Hawaii on TV, those big festivals, right? So people were seeing it more. There was definitely a greater opportunity to see it and hear it than there had been before the festivals, for sure.
Now, when I was watching the films, not having a deep history of slack key guitar, knowing a bit from your stuff, do artists making up new songs, or are they just playing old songs a lot? Because I was a little confused on that when the artists were talking.
Both.
Okay.
Both. There are new slack key songs that are written, and there are new versions and takes and interpretations of some of the old traditional stuff too. Jeff Peterson is a composer too. He will cover songs, like he does a lot of the Queen songs, Queen Liliuokalani songs, but he does a great deal of his own composing as well.
So this is a question just for you. How well are you known in the Hawaiian music industry now?
Oh, I wouldn't say I'm well known at all. I'm a fly on the wall.
Fair enough. When it says in the thing, you discuss the guy recording the musicians, and they say they have no time to fix things. The tape just keeps on rolling.
Say that again?
When they're recording the artist, they say the tape just keeps on rolling. They don't have time to fix things. They just keep going. Is this still prevalent today?
Depends on the artist. Certainly with some of the older artists, you want to keep it running. Like, I recorded three of George's last three albums. We did it in his living room in his house, right? I learned very quickly not to shut it off, which is exactly what George Winston would say, and Howard Johnson, who was the engineer for Dancing Cat. Yeah, because they're not going to do it the same way, you know, and you just want to keep rolling, and you don't know when something truly magical is going to happen. Now, some of the newer artists are much more take-oriented, but a lot of those guys, you know, the original, the old-timers, the uncles, right, they were self-taught, you know, and learned by the family, whereas like a guy like Jeff Peterson went to school for music, got a degree in jazz. Now, slack key is his love, and that's what he plays, right? But he's a college-educated, you know, musician, so he has a more technical approach to how he does things like that.
Now, how do you deal with a dead end? You're looking for somebody, you're on your way, and you just get stopped for whatever reason. How do you cope with that as a filmmaker?
You mean like there's somebody I'm looking to interview?
I'd say you have a lead, you thought you got him, boom, dead.
That's a hard thing for me to answer, because I'm somebody who doesn't take no for an answer. I mean, I don't know if you remember, but when we talked about my Dream Out Loud film, look at the hoops I went through to get Bono to finally do the interview that he agreed to do. I just don't take no for an answer. I just keep going until I get what I need to get. Unless they flat out say, no, I'm absolutely not going to do this. You know what I mean? But if there's an open door and I just have to figure out how to get through it, I just keep going until I get through it. If someone says absolutely no, then you have to build a bridge. You have to find a way to tell the story without that.
Do Slack Key albums sell more today than they did in the past?
That's a really good question. I'm going to say it's the same. I'm going to say that because most Slack Key music is probably actually sold at the show. You go to see the artists play, whether you're a fan or whether you're just introduced to the music and you're moved by it. Then you go back to the table afterwards and you can actually meet the artist and shake hands with them. And so you buy a CD. I think they sell more of their music when they're touring than they do, you know, through iTunes or something like that.
Now, I was reading that people like the liner notes. Now, you are definitely a music consumer immensely. Do you like liner notes, or you just like to put it on and just enjoy the music?
Tremendously. No, I put it on right away, but I love to read the liner notes while I'm listening to it. I miss, that's the thing that I miss about, even CDs. I remember with cassettes, when you pulled out all the things and the back of albums and, you know, the sleeve inside and Hawaiian music with the CD, still beautiful liner notes in the CD. And I miss that as CDs are going away now from the, you know, from the rock artists that I love and things like that, because they're releasing stuff more just digitally now. And so you don't get the physical thing. So oftentimes with the artists that are my heroes, if they do a physical release and it's like a limited edition thing, I'll spend the extra money to get that because I want that physical thing with the liner notes and the whole thing. That was a whole art that this next generation is sadly missing out on, unless they buy the vinyl version of things. Vinyl has become kind of a, you know, something that's made a resurgence.
I know you're ready for your fun questions. You've done this a zillion times. So besides you two, what's the next artist you own the most albums of?
Oh, Bruce Springsteen.
Well, that's an easy second question. How many times have you seen the Boston concerts? I have to ask.
Probably a dozen.
That's not bad. That's a pretty light.
I stopped seeing him when Clarence Clemons died. I just couldn't bring myself to go see the E Street Band without Clarence. Now, you know, at 52 and Bruce at 70, I'm hoping and praying I get to see him one more time, you know, after the pandemic. I want to see them. I want to see him at least one more time, to see the guy. Cause I grew up in New Jersey. I love his music. I think he's a great storyteller. And I hope I get to see him one more time.
The pandemic's over. Concerts are back. What's the first artist you're going to see in Hawaii?
Well, probably you too. But that's because I'll travel to see them. You know, Bruce or you too, I'll say. Whichever one is touring first, you know what I mean, that I'm willing to travel for. I'm kind of curious to see what the Chili Peppers do with John Frusciante back. I think that's going to be special. But I don't know how long that's going to take. I'm not as up on what's going on with that. I know they're working on an album, but I don't know how long it'll take.
Before we let you go, always tell us where we can find your stuff. I know it's always at the same place, but you know the website better than I do.
So everything's on Amazon Prime now. You can just search for the names, and you can go to my webpage, davidbarryfilms.com, and just look under the films tab, and it's kind of chronological. Well, I put Dream Out Loud at the very top, it's the most recent. And then the Hawaiian films all go chronological after that.
Thank you for your time and have a great day.
Thank you, my friend.